heart lifted at the sound. Look at you, with freshly baked muffins, and I'm the one dressed like a 1950s housewife, said Madeline. I love the idea of baking, but then I can't seem to make it a reality. I never seem to have all the ingredients. How do you manage to have all that flour and sugar and, I don't know, vanilla extract? Well, said Jane, I buy them from this place called a supermarket. I suppose you make a list, said Madeline, and then you remember to take the list with you. Jane saw that Madeline's feelings about Jane's baking were similar to Jane's feelings about Madeline's accessories. Confused admiration for an exotic behaviour. Celeste and the boys are coming today. She'll hoover up those muffins of yours. Tea or coffee? We better not have champagne every time we meet, although I could be convinced. Got anything to celebrate? Madeline led her into a big combined kitchen and living area. Nothing to celebrate, said Jane. Just ordinary tea would be great. So, how did the move go? Asked Madeline. She switched on the kettle. We were away up the coast when you were moving, otherwise I would have offered Ed to help you. I'm always offering him up as a mover. He loves it. Seriously? No. No, he hates it. He gets so cross with me. He says, I'm not an appliance you can loan out. She put on a deep voice to imitate her husband as she switched the kettle on, her ponytail swinging. But you know, he pays money to lift weights at the gym, so why not lift a few boxes for free? Have a seat. Sorry about the mess. Jane sat down at a long timber table covered with the detritus of family life. Ballerina stickers, a novel face down, sunscreen, keys, some sort of electronic toy, an airplane made out of Lego. My family helped me move, said Jane. There are a lot of stairs. Everyone was kind of mad at me, but they're the ones who never let me pay for movers. If I'm lugging this freaking refrigerator back down these stairs in 6 months' time, then I'll, her brother had said. Milk? Sugar? Asked Madeline as she dunked tea bags. Neither, just black. I saw one of those kindergarten mothers this morning, Jane told Madeline. She wanted to bring up the subject of the orientation day, while Ziggy wasn't in the room. At the gas station. I think she pretended not to see me. She didn't think it. She knew it. The woman had snapped her head in the other direction so fast it was like she'd been slapped. Oh, really? Madeline sounded amused. She helped herself to a muffin. Which one? Do you remember her name? Harper, said Jane. I'm pretty sure it was Harper. I remember I called her Hovering Harper to myself because she seemed to hover about Renata all the time. She's one of your blonde bobs, I think, with a long, droopy face. Kind of like a basset hound. Madeline chortled. That's Harper exactly. Yes. She's very good friends with Renata, and she's bizarrely proud about it, as if Renata is some sort of celebrity. She always needs to let you know that she and Renata see each other socially. Oh, we all had a marvellous night at some marvellous restaurant. She took a bite of her muffin. I guess that's why Harper doesn't want to know me then, said Jane, because of what happened. Jane, interrupted Madeline, this muffin is magnificent. Jane smiled at Madeline's amazed face. There was a crumb on her nose. Thanks. I can give you the recipe if you... Oh, Lord, I don't want the recipe. I just want the muffins. Madeline took a big sip of her tea. You know what? Where's my phone? I'm going to text Harper right now and demand to know why she pretended not to see my new muffin-baking friend today. Don't you dare, said Jane. Madeline, she realized, was one of those slightly dangerous people who jumped right in defending their friends and stirred up far bigger waves than the first tiny ripple. Well, I won't have it, said Madeline. If those women give you a hard time over what happened at orientation, I'll be furious. It could happen to anyone. I would have made Ziggy apologize, said Jane. She needed to make it clear to Madeline that she was the sort of mother who made her child say sorry. I believed him when he said he didn't do it. Of course he did, said Madeline. I'm sure he didn't do it. He seems like a gentle child. I'm 100% positive, said Jane. Well, I'm 99% positive. She stopped and swallowed, because she was suddenly feeling an overwhelming desire to explain her doubts to Madeline. To tell her exactly what that 1% of doubt represented. To just say it. To turn it into a story she'd never shared with anyone. To package it up into an incident with a beginning, a middle, and an end. It was a beautiful, warm spring night in October. Jasmine in the air. I had terrible hay fever. Scratchy throat, itchy eyes. She could just talk without thinking about it, without feeling it, until the story was done. And then perhaps Madeline would smile and say in her definite, don't argue manner, oh, you mustn't worry about that, Jane. That's of no consequence. Ziggy is exactly who you think he is. You are his mother. You know him. But what if she did the opposite? If the doubt Jane was feeling right now was reflected even for an instant on Madeline's face, then what? It would be the worst betrayal of Ziggy. Oh, Abigail, come have a muffin with us. Madeline looked up as a teenage girl came into the kitchen. Jane, this is my daughter, Abigail. A false note had crept into Madeline's voice. She put down her muffin and fiddled with one of her earrings. Abigail, she said again, this is Jane. Jane turned in her chair. Hi, Abigail, she said to the teenage girl, who was standing very still and straight, her hands clasped in front of her, as if she were taking part in a religious ceremony. Hello, said Abigail, and she smiled at Jane, a sudden flash of unexpected warmth. It was Madeline's brilliant smile, but apart from that, you would never have picked them for mother and daughter. Abigail's colouring was darker, and her features were sharper. Her hair hung down her back in that ratty just-got-out-of-bed look, and she wore a shapeless sack-like brown dress over black leggings. Intricate henna markings extended from her hands all the way up her forearms. Her only jewellery was a silver skull hanging from a black shoelace around her neck. "Dad is picking me up," said Abigail. "What? No, he's not," said Madeline. Yeah, I'm going to stay there tonight, because I've got that thing tomorrow with Louisa, and we have to be there early, and it's closer from Dad's place. It's 10 minutes closer at the most, protested Madeline. But it's just easier going from Dad and Bonnie's place, said Abigail. We can get out the door faster. We won't be sitting waiting in the car while Fred looks for his shoes or Chloe runs back inside to get a different Barbie doll or whatever. I suppose Skye never has to go back inside for her Barbie doll, said Madeline. Bonnie would never let Skye play with Barbie dolls in a million years, said Abigail, with a roll of her eyes, as if that would be obvious to anyone. I mean, you really shouldn't let Chloe play with them, Mum. They're, like, badly unfeminist, and they give her unrealistic body shape expectations. Yes, well, the boat has sailed when it comes to Chloe and Barbie. Madeline gave Jane a rueful smile. There was a beep of a horn from outside. That's him, said Abigail. You already called him, said Madeline. Colour rose in her cheeks. You arranged this without asking me? I asked Dad, said Abigail. She came around the side of the table and gave Madeline a kiss on the cheek. Bye, Mum. Nice to meet you. Abigail smiled at Jane. He couldn't help but like her. Abigail Marie! Madeline stood up from the table. This is unacceptable. You don't just get to choose where you're going to spend the night. Abigail stopped. She turned around. Why not? She said. Why should you and Dad get to choose who gets the next turn of me? Jane could again see a resemblance to Madeline in the way Abigail quivered with rage. As if I'm something you own? Like I'm your car and you get to share me? It's not like that, began Madeline. It is like that, said Abigail. There was another beep of the horn from outside. What's going on? A middle-aged man strolled into the kitchen, wearing a wetsuit rolled down to his waist, revealing a broad, very hairy chest. He was with a little boy who was dressed exactly the same way, except his chest was skinny and hairless. He said to Abigail, "Your dad is out front." "I know that," said Abigail. She looked at the man's hairy chest. "You should not walk around like that in public. It's disgusting." "What? Showing off my fine physique?" The man banged a proud fist against his chest and smiled at Jane. She smiled back uneasily. "Revolting," said Abigail. "I'm going." "We'll talk more about this later," said Madeline. "Whatever." "Don't you whatever me," called out Madeline. The front door slammed. "Mummy, I'm starved to death," said the little boy. "Have a muffin," said Madeline gloomily. She sank back down into her chair. "Jane, this is my husband Ed and my son Fred. Ed, Fred, easy to remember." "Because they rhyme," clarified Fred. "G'day," said Ed. He shook Jane's hand. "Sorry about the disgusting sight of me. Fred and I have been surfing." He sat down across the table from Jane, next to Madeline, and put his arm around her. "Abigail giving you grief?" Madeline pressed her face against his shoulder. "You're like a wet, salty dog." "These are good!" Fred took a gigantic bite from his muffin while simultaneously snaking out his hand and taking a second one. Jane would bring extra next time. "Mummy, we need you!" Chloe called from down the hallway. "I'm gonna go ride my skateboard." Fred took a third muffin. "Helmet!" said Madeline and Ed at the same time. "Mummy!" "Coming," said Madeline. "Talk to Jane, Ed." She went off down the hallway. Jane prepared herself to carry the conversation, but Ed smiled easily at her, took a muffin, and settled back in his chair. "So, you're Ziggy's mum." How'd you come up with the name Ziggy? My brother suggested it, said Jane. He's a big Bob Marley fan, and I guess Bob Marley called his son Ziggy. She paused, remembering the miraculous weight of her new baby in her arms, his solemn eyes. I liked that it was kind of out there. My name is so dull. Plain Jane and all that. Jane is a beautiful classic name, said Ed very definitely, making her fall in love with him just a little. In point of fact, I had Jane on my list when we were naming Chloe, but I got overruled, and I'd already won on Fred. Jane's eyes were caught by a wedding photo on the wall. Madeline, wearing a champagne-coloured tulle dress, sitting on Ed's lap. Both of them had their eyes screwed shut with helpless laughter. How did you and Madeline meet? She asked to make conversation. Ed brightened. It was obviously a story he liked to tell. I lived across the street from her when we were kids, he said. Madeline lived next door to a big Lebanese family. They had six sons. Big, strapping boys. I was terrified of them. They used to play cricket in the street, and sometimes Madeline would join in. She'd trot out half the size of these big lumps, and she'd have ribbons in her hair and those shiny bangles. Well, you know what she's like. The girliest girl you'd ever seen. But my God, she could play cricket. He put down his muffin and stood up to demonstrate. So, out she'd come, flick, flick of the hair, flounce, flounce of the dress, and she'd take the bat, and next thing, wham! He slammed an imaginary cricket bat. And those boys would fall to their knees, clutching their heads. Are you telling the cricket story again? Madeline returned from Chloe's bedroom. That's when I fell in love with her, said Ed. Truly, madly, deeply. Watching from my bedroom window. I didn't even know he existed, said Madeline airily. Nope, she didn't. So we grow up and leave home, and I hear from my mum that Madeline has married some wanker, said Ed. Shh! Madeline slapped his arm. Then, years later, I go to this barbecue for a friend's 30th birthday. There's a cricket game in the backyard, and who's out there batting in her stilettos, all blinged up, exactly the same, but little Madeline from across the road. My heart just about stopped. That's a very romantic story, said Jane. I nearly didn't go to that barbecue, said Ed. Jane saw that his eyes were shiny, even though he must have told this story 100 times before. And I nearly didn't go either, said Madeline. I had to cancel a pedicure, and I would normally never cancel a pedicure. They smiled at each other. Jane looked away. She picked up her mug of tea and took a sip, even though it was all gone. The doorbell rang. That will be Celeste, said Madeline. Great, thought Jane, continuing to pretend sip her empty mug of tea. Now I'll be in the presence of both great love and great beauty. All around her was colour, rich, vibrant colour. She was the only colourless thing in this whole house. Miss Barnes. Obviously, parents form their own social groups outside of school. The conflict at the trivia night might not necessarily have anything to do with what was going on at Piriwi Public. I just thought I should point that out. Thea. Yes, well, Miss Barnes would say that, wouldn't she? Chapter 16. What did you think of Jane? Madeline asked Ed that night in the bathroom as he cleaned his teeth, and she used her fingertip to apply an eye-wateringly expensive dab of eye cream to her fine lines and wrinkles. She had a marketing degree, for heaven's sake. She knew she'd just blown her money buying a jar of hope. Ed? I'm cleaning my teeth. Give me a moment. He rinsed his mouth out, spat, and tapped his toothbrush on the side of the basin. Tap, tap, tap. Always three definite, decisive taps, as if the toothbrush were a hammer or wrench. Sometimes, if she'd been drinking champagne, she could get weak from laughter just watching Ed tap his toothbrush on the basin. Jane looks about 12 years old to me, said Ed. Abigail seems older than her. I can't get my head around her being a fellow parent. He pointed his toothbrush at her and grinned. But she'll be our secret weapon at this year's trivia night. She'll know the answers to all the Gen Y questions. I reckon I might know more pop culture stuff than Jane, said Madeline. I get the feeling she's not your typical 24-year-old. She seems almost old-fashioned in some ways, like someone from my mother's generation. She examined her face, sighed, and put her jar of hope back on the shelf. She can't be that old-fashioned, said Ed. You said she got pregnant after a one-night stand. She went ahead and had the baby, said Madeline. That's sort of old-fashioned. But then she should have left him on the church doorstep, said Ed, in a wicker basket. A what? A wicker basket. That's a word, isn't it? Wicker? I thought you said a wicked basket. I did. I was covering up my mistake. Hey, what's with all the gum? She was chewing it all day. I know. It's like she's addicted. He turned off the bathroom light. They both went to opposite sides of the bed, snapped on their bedside lamps, and pulled back the cover in a smooth, practiced, synchronized move that proved, depending on Madeline's mood, that they either had the perfect marriage or that they were stuck in a middle-class suburban rut and they needed to sell the house and go traveling around India. I'd quite like to give Jane a makeover, mused Madeline as Ed found his page in his book. He was a big fan of Patricia Cornwell murder mysteries. The way she pulls back her hair like that, all flat on her head, she needs some volume. Volume, murmured Ed. Absolutely. That's what she needs. I was thinking the same thing. He flipped a page. We need to help find her a boyfriend, said Madeline. You'd better get on that, said Ed. I'd quite like to give Celeste a makeover too, said Madeline. I know that sounds strange. Obviously she looks beautiful no matter what. Celeste. Beautiful, said Ed. Can't say I've noticed. Ha ha! Madeline picked up her book and put it straight down again. They seem so different, Jane and Celeste, but I feel like they're also sort of similar. I can't quite work out how. Ed put down his own book. I can tell you how they're similar. Can you now? They're both damaged, said Ed. Damaged? Said Madeline. How are they damaged? Don't know, said Ed. I just recognize damaged girls. I used to date them. I can spot a crazy chick a mile off. So, was I damaged too? Asked Madeline. Is that what attracted you? Nope, said Ed. He picked up his book again. you weren't damaged. Yes, I was, protested Madeline. She wanted to be interesting and damaged too. I was heartbroken when you met me. There's a difference between heartbroken and damaged, said Ed. You were sad and hurt. Maybe your heart was broken, but you weren't broken. Now be quiet, because I think I'm falling for a red herring here, and I'm not falling for it, Miss Cornwall. No, I'm not. Hmm, said Madeline. Well, Jane might be damaged, but I don't see what Celeste has got to be damaged about. She's beautiful and rich and happily married, and she doesn't have an ex-husband stealing her daughter away from her. He's not trying to steal her away, said Ed, his eyes back on his book. This is just Abigail being a teenager. Teenagers are crazy. You know that. Madeline picked up her own book. She thought of Jane and Ziggy walking off hand in hand down the driveway after they left that afternoon. Ziggy was telling Jane something, one little hand gesticulating wildly, and Jane had her head tipped to one side, listening, her other hand holding out the car keys to open her car. Madeline heard her say, I know. Let's go to that place where we got those yummy tacos. Watching them brought back a flood of memories from the years when she was a single mother. For 5 years, it had been just her and Abigail. They'd lived in a little two-bedroom flat above an Italian restaurant. They ate a lot of takeout pasta and free garlic bread. Madeline had put on 7 kilos. They were the Mackenzie girls in Unit 9. She'd changed Abigail's name back to her maiden name, and she refused to change it again when she married Ed. A woman could only change her surname so many times before it got ridiculous. She couldn't stand having Abigail walk around with her father's surname when Nathan chose to spend his Christmas lying on a beach in Bali with a trashy little hairdresser. A hairdresser who, by the way, didn't even have good hair, black roots, and split ends. I always thought that Nathan's punishment for walking out on us would be that Abigail wouldn't love him the way she loved me, she said to Ed. I used to say it to myself all the time. Abigail won't want Nathan walking her down the aisle. He'll pay the price, I thought. But you know what? He's not paying for his sins. Now he's got Bonnie, who's nicer and younger and prettier than me. He's got a brand new daughter who can write out the whole alphabet. And now he's getting Abigail too. He got away with it all. He hasn't got a single regret. She was surprised to hear her voice crack. She thought she was just angry, but now she knew she was hurt. Abigail had infuriated her before. She'd frustrated and annoyed her, but this was the first time she'd hurt her. She's meant to love me best, she said childishly, and she tried to laugh because it was a joke, except that she was deadly serious. I thought she loved me best. Ed put his book down and put his arm around her. Do you want me to kill the bastard? Bump him off? I could frame Bonnie for it. Yes, please, said Madeline into his shoulder. That would be lovely. Detective Sergeant Adrian Quinlan. We haven't made any arrests at this stage. I can say that we do believe we have probably already spoken to the person or persons involved. Stew. I don't think anyone, including the police, have got the faintest idea about who did what. Chapter 17. Gabrielle. I thought there might have been a certain, I don't know, etiquette about handing out party invitations. I thought what happened on that first day of kindergarten was kind of inappropriate. 4 months before the trivia night. Smile, Ziggy. Smile. Ziggy finally smiled at the exact same moment that Jane's father yawned. Jane clicked the shutter and then checked the photo on the screen of her digital camera. Ziggy and her mum were both smiling beautifully, while her dad was captured mid-yawn, mouth agape, eyes scrunched. He was tired because he'd had to get up so early to make it all the way to the peninsula from Granville to see his grandson on his first day of school. Jane's parents had always gone to bed late and gotten up late, and these days anything that required them leaving the house before 9 a.m. was a tremendous effort. Her father had taken early retirement from his job in the public service last year, and since then he and Jane's mother had been staying up late doing their puzzles until 3 or 4 in the morning. "Our parents are turning into vampires," Jane's brother had said to her. "Jigsaw playing vampires." "Would you like my husband to take a photo of you all together?" said a woman standing nearby. "I'd offer to take it myself, but technology and I are not friends." Jane looked up. The woman wore a full-length paisley skirt with a black singlet. Her wrists seemed to be adorned with twine, and she wore her hair in one long single plait. There was a tattoo of a Chinese symbol on her shoulder. She looked a bit out of place next to all the other parents in their casual beach wear, gym gear, or business clothes. Her husband seemed a good deal older than her and was wearing a t-shirt and shorts, standard middle-aged dad gear. He was holding the hand of a tiny, mouse-like little girl with long, scraggly hair, whose uniform looked like it was 3 sizes too big for her. "I bet you're Bonnie," thought Jane suddenly, remembering how Madeline had described her ex-husband's wife, at the same time as the woman said, "I'm Bonnie, and this is my husband, Nathan, and my little girl, Sky." "Thanks so much," said Jane, handing over the camera to Madeline's ex-husband. She went to stand with her parents and Ziggy. "Say cheese and biscuits." Nathan held up the camera. "Huh?" said Ziggy. "Coffee," yawned Jane's mother. Nathan took the photo. "There you go." He handed back the camera, just as another little curly-haired girl marched straight up to his daughter. Jane felt sick. She recognized her immediately. It was the girl who had accused Ziggy of trying to choke her, Amabella. Jane looked around. Where was the angry mother? "What is your name?" said Amabella importantly to Skye. She was carrying a large pile of pale pink envelopes. "Sky," whispered the little girl. She was so painfully shy, it hurt to watch her try to squeeze the words out. Amabella flipped through her envelopes. "Sky, Sky, Sky." "Goodness, can you read all those names already?" asked Jane's mother. "I've actually been reading since I was 3, said Amabella politely. She continued to flip. "Sky." She handed over a pink envelope. "This is an invitation to my 5th birthday. It's an A party, because my name starts with A."
"Already reading before they start school," said Jane's dad chummily to Nathan. "Top of the class already. Must have had tutoring, do you reckon?"
"Well, not to blow our own trumpet or anything, but Sky here is already reading quite well too," said Nathan. "And we don't believe in tutoring. Do we, Bon?
We prefer to let Skye's growth happen organically, said Bonnie.
Organic, eh? Said Jane's dad.
He furrowed his brow.
Like fruit?
Amabella turned to Ziggy. What's your...
She froze. An expression of pure panic crossed her face. She clutched the pink envelopes tight to her chest as if to prevent Ziggy from stealing one, and without saying a word, she turned on her heel and ran off.
Goodness, what was all that about? Said Jane's mother.
Oh, that was the kid who said I hurt her, said Ziggy matter-of-factly. But I never did, Grandma.
Jane looked around the playground. Everywhere she looked, she could see children in brand new, too big school uniforms. Every single one was holding a pale pink envelope.
Harper. Look, nobody in that school knew Renata better than me. We were very close. I can tell you for a fact, she was not trying to make a point that day.
Samantha.
Oh, my God, of course she was making a point.
Chapter 18. Madeline was being assaulted by a vicious bout of PMS on Chloe's first day of school. She was fighting back, but to no avail. I choose my mood, she told herself as she stood in the kitchen tossing back evening primrose capsules like Valium. She knew it was no use. You were meant to take them regularly, but she had to try something, even though the stupid things were probably just a waste of money. She was furious with the bad timing. She would have liked to have found a way to blame someone, ideally her ex-husband, but she couldn't find a way to make Nathan responsible for her menstrual cycle. No doubt Bonnie danced in the moonlight to deal with the ebbs and flows of womanhood. PMS was still a relatively new experience for Madeline. Another jolly part of the aging process. She'd never really believed in it before. Then, as she hit her late 30s, her body said, "Okay, you don't believe in PMS? I'll show you PMS. Get a load of this, bitch." Now, for one day every month, she had to fake everything. Her basic humanity, her love for her children, her love for Ed. She'd once been appalled to hear of a woman claiming PMS as a defense for murder. Now she understood. She could happily murder someone today. In fact, she felt like there should be some sort of recognition for her remarkable strength of character that she didn't. All the way to school, she did deep breathing exercises to help calm her mood. Thankfully, Fred and Chloe weren't fighting in the back seat. Ed hummed to himself as he drove, which was kind of unbearable. The unnecessary, relentless cheerfulness of the man. But at least he was wearing a clean shirt and hadn't insisted on wearing the too small white polo shirt with the tomato sauce stain he thought was invisible. PMS would not win today. PMS would not ruin this milestone. They found a legal parking spot straight away. The children actually got out of the car the first time they were asked.
Happy New Year, Mrs. Ponder,
she called out as they walked past the little white weatherboard cottage next to the school, where plump, white-haired Mrs. Ponder sat on her fold-out chair with a cup of tea and the newspaper.
Morning, called Mrs. Ponder eagerly. Keep walking, keep walking,
Madeline hissed at Ed as he started to slow his pace. He loved a good long chat with Mrs. Ponder. She'd been a nurse in Singapore during the war, or with anyone, really, particularly if they were over the age of 70.
Chloe's first day of school, Ed called out. Big day.
Ah, bless, said Mrs. Ponder.
They kept walking. Madeline had her mood under control, like a rabid dog on a tight leash.
The schoolyard was filled with chatting parents and shouting children. The parents stood still while the children ran helter-skelter around them, like marbles skidding about a pinball machine. There were the new kindergarten parents, smiling brightly and nervily. There were the Year 6 mums in their animated, unbreakable little circles, secure in their positions as queens of the school. There were the blonde bobs, caressing their freshly cut blonde bobs. Ugh, it was lovely. The sea breeze, the children's bright little faces, and, oh, for fuck's sake, there was her ex-husband. It wasn't like she hadn't known he'd be there, but it was outrageous that he looked so comfortable in Madeline's schoolyard, so pleased with himself, so ordinary and dadly. And worse, he was taking a photo of Jane and Ziggy. They belonged to Madeline, and a pleasant-looking couple who didn't seem much older than Madeline, but who she knew must be Jane's parents. He was a terrible photographer too. Don't rely on Nathan to capture a memory for you. Don't rely on Nathan for anything. There's Abigail's dad, said Fred. I didn't see his car out front. Nathan drove a canary yellow Lexus. Poor Fred would have quite liked a father who cared about cars. Ed didn't even know the difference between models. That's my half-sister. Chloe pointed at Nathan and Bonnie's daughter. Skye's school uniform was gigantic on her, and with her big sad eyes and long, fair, wavy, wispy hair, she looked like a sad little waif from a production of Les Miserables. Madeline could already see what was going to happen. Chloe was going to adopt Skye. Skye was exactly the sort of shy little girl Madeline would have taken under her wing when she was at school. Chloe would ask Skye to come over for playdates so she could play with her hair. Just at that moment, Skye blinked rapidly as a strand of her hair fell in her eyes, and Madeline flinched. The child blinked just like Abigail used to blink when her hair fell in her eyes. That was a piece of Madeline's child, Madeline's past, and Madeline's heart. There should be a law against ex-husbands procreating. For the millionth time, Chloe, she hissed, Skye is Abigail's half-sister, not yours. Deep breaths, said Ed. Deep breaths. Nathan handed the camera back to Jane and strolled towards them. He'd grown out his hair recently. It was thick and grey and flip-flopping about on his forehead as if he were a middle-aged Australian Hugh Grant. Madeline suspected he'd grown it deliberately to one-up Ed, who was almost completely bald now. Maddie, he said. He was the only person in the world to call her Maddie. Once, that had been a source of great pleasure. Now it was a source of profound irritation. Ed, mate, and little... it's your first day at school too, isn't it? Nathan could never be bothered to remember Madeline's children's names. He held up his palm for a high five with Fred. G'day, champ. Fred betrayed her by high-fiving him back. Nathan kissed Madeline on the cheek and shook Ed's hand enthusiastically. He took an ostentatious relish in the civility of his dealings with his ex-wife and family. Nathan, intoned Ed. He had a particular way of saying Nathan's name, a deepening and drawling of his voice, and an emphasis on the second syllable. It always made Nathan frown slightly, never quite sure if he was being laughed at or not. But today, it wasn't enough to save Madeline's mood. Big day, said Nathan. You two are old hands, but this is a first for us. I'm not ashamed to say I got a bit teary when I saw Skye in her school uniform. Madeline couldn't help herself. Skye is not your first child to start school, Nathan, she said. Nathan flushed. She'd broken their unspoken no hard feelings rule. But for God's sake, only a saint could let that one go. Abigail had been at school for 2 months before Nathan had noticed. He'd called up in the middle of the day for a chat.
She's at school, Madeline had told him.
School? He'd spluttered. She's not old enough for school, is she?
Speaking of Abigail, Maddie, are you okay if we swap weekends this week? Said Nathan. We're going to see Bonnie's mother down at Bowral on Saturday, and Abigail hates to miss seeing her.
Bonnie materialized by his side, smiling beatifically. She was always smiling beatifically. Madeline suspected drugs.
My mother and Abigail have such a special connection, she said to Madeline, as if this would be news that Madeline would welcome. This was the thing. Who would want their daughter having a special connection with their ex-husband's wife's mother? Only Bonnie could think that you would want to hear that. And yet, you couldn't complain, could you? You couldn't even think, shut up, bitch, because Bonnie was not a bitch. So all Madeline could do was just stand there and smile and nod and take it, while her mood snarled and snapped and strained at the leash.
Sure, she said. No problem.
Daddy! Skye pulled on Nathan's shirt, and he lifted her up onto his hip while Bonnie smiled tenderly at them both.
I'm so sorry, Maddie, but I'm just not cut out for this.
That's what Nathan had said when Abigail was 3 weeks old. A fretful baby, who, since she'd been home from the hospital, had never slept longer than 32 minutes. Madeline had yawned. Me either. She didn't think he meant it literally. An hour later, she'd watched in stunned amazement as he'd packed his clothes into his long red cricket bag, and his eyes had rested briefly on the baby as if she belonged to someone else, and he left. She would never, ever forgive or forget that cursory glance he gave his beautiful baby daughter. And now that daughter was a teenager who made her own lunch and caught the bus to high school all on her own and called out over her shoulder as she left, "Don't forget I'm staying at Dad's place tonight."
"Hi, Madeline," said Jane. Jane was once again wearing a plain V-necked white T-shirt. Did she own no other sort of shirt? The same blue denim skirt and thongs. Her hair was pulled back in that painfully tight ponytail, and of course she was doing her clandestine gum-chewing. Her simplicity was somehow a relief to Madeline's mood, as if Jane were what she needed to feel better, in the same way that you longed for plain dry toast after you'd been ill.
"Jane," she said warmly, "how are you? I see you met my delightful ex-husband here and his family."
"Ha, ha, ha," said Nathan, presumably sounding like Santa Claus because he didn't know how else to respond to the delightful ex-husband barb. Madeline felt Ed's hand rest on her shoulder, a warning that she was skating too close to the line of civility.
"I did," said Jane. Her face gave nothing away. "These are my parents, Di and Bill."
"Hello. Your grandson is just beautiful."
Madeline shrugged off Ed and shook hands with Jane's parents, who were somehow lovely. You could just tell by looking at them.
"We actually think Ziggy is my own darling father reincarnated," sparkled Jane's mother.
"No, we don't," said Jane's dad.
He smiled at Chloe, who was pulling at Madeline's dress.
"And this must be your little one, eh?"
Chloe handed a pink envelope to Madeline.
"Can you keep this, Mummy? It's an invitation to Amabella's party. You have to come dressed as something starting with A. I'm going to dress up as a princess."
She ran off.
"Apparently poor little Ziggy isn't invited to that party," Jane's mother said in a lowered voice.
"Mum," said Jane, "leave it."
"What? She shouldn't be handing out invitations in the playground unless she's asking the whole class," said Madeline.
She scanned the playground for Renata
and saw Celeste walk in through the school gates, late as usual, holding hands with the twins, looking impossibly gorgeous. It was as though another species had turned up at school. Madeline saw one of the Year 2 dads catch sight of Celeste and do a comical double take and nearly trip over her school bag. And there was Renata, bustling straight for Celeste and handing her two pink envelopes. "I'm going to kill her," said Madeline. Mrs. Lipman.
"Look, I'd rather not say anything further. We deserve to be left in peace. A parent is dead. The entire school community is grieving."
Gabrielle.
I wouldn't say the entire school community is grieving. That might be a stretch.
Celeste saw the man trip while he was checking her out. Maybe she should have an affair. It might make something happen. Push her marriage over the cliff it had been inexorably creeping toward for so many years. But the thought of being with any other man besides Perry filled her with a heavy, listless sensation. She'd be so bored. She was not interested in other men. Perry made her feel alive. If she left him, she'd be single and celibate and bored forever. It wasn't fair. He ruined her.
"You're holding my hand too tight," said Josh.
"Yeah, Mummy," said Max.
She loosened her grip. "Sorry, boys," she said. It hadn't been a good morning. First, there was something cataclysmically wrong with one of Josh's socks that could not be rectified with any amount of adjusting. Then Max couldn't find a very specific little Lego man with a very specific yellow hat that he required right at that very minute. They'd both wailed and wailed for Daddy. They didn't care that he was on the other side of the world. They wanted him. Celeste wanted Perry too. He would have fixed Josh's sock. He would have found Max's Lego man. She'd always known that she was going to struggle with the school morning routine. She and the boys were late sleepers and generally out of sorts in the morning, whereas Perry woke up happy and energetic. If he'd been here this morning, they would have been early for their first day at school. There would have been laughter in the car, not silence, interspersed by pitiful shudders from the boys. She'd given them lollipops in the end. They were still sucking on them as she got them out of the car, and she'd seen one of the kindergarten mothers she recognized from the orientation day walk by and smile sweetly at the boys while flicking Celeste a bad mother look.
"There's Chloe and Ziggy," said Josh. "Let's go kill them," said Max.
"Boys, don't talk like that," said Celeste. "Good God, what would people think?"
"Just pretend killing Mummy," said Josh kindly. "Chloe and Ziggy like it."
"Celeste. It is Celeste, isn't it?"
A woman appeared in front of her as the boys ran off.
"I met you and your husband at the uniform shop a few weeks ago."
She touched her chest.
"Renata. I'm Amabella's mum."
"Of course. Hi, Renata," said Celeste.
"Perry couldn't make it today?" Renata looked around hopefully.
"He's in Vienna," said Celeste. "He travels a lot for work."
"I'm sure he does," said Renata knowingly. "I thought I recognized him the other day, and so I Googled him when I got back home, and that's when it clicked. The Perry White. I've actually seen your husband speak a few times. I'm in the funds management world myself."
"Great. A Perry groupie." Celeste often wondered what the Perry groupies would think if they were to see him doing the things he did.
"I've got some invitations for the boys to Amabella's 5th birthday party." Renata handed her 2 pink envelopes. "Of course, you and Perry are most welcome to come along. Nice way for all the parents to start getting to know one another."
"Lovely."
Celeste took the envelopes and put them in her bag.
Good morning, ladies.
It was Madeline, wearing one of her beautiful signature dresses. She had two spots of colour high on her cheeks and a dangerous glitter in her eyes.
Thank you for Chloe's invitation to Amabella's party.
Oh, dear, is Amabella handing them out? Renata frowned and patted at her handbag.
Oh, dear, she must have taken them from my handbag. I did mean to hand them discreetly to the parents.
Yes, because it looks like you're inviting the whole class except for one little boy.
I assume you're talking about Ziggy, the child who left bruises on my daughter's neck, said Renata. He didn't make it onto the invitation list. Surprise, surprise.
Come on now, Renata, said Madeline. You can't do this.
So sue me.
Renata shot Celeste a glinting, mischievous look, as if they were in on a joke together. Celeste took a breath. She didn't want to be involved.
I might just...
I'm so sorry, Renata, interrupted Madeline with a queenly smile, but Chloe won't be able to make it to the party.
What a pity, said Renata. You know what? I think I might terminate this conversation before I say something I regret.
She nodded at Celeste. Nice to see you again. Madeline watched her go. She seemed invigorated.
This is war, Celeste, she said happily. War, I tell you.
Oh, Madeline, sighed Celeste. Harper.
I know we all like to put Celeste on a pedestal, but I don't think she always made the best nutritional choices for her children. I saw the twins eating lollipops for breakfast on their first day of school.
Samantha.
Parents do tend to judge each other. I don't know why. Maybe because none of us really know what we're doing. And I guess that can sometimes lead to conflict. Just not normally on this sort of scale.
Jackie.
I, for one, don't have the time to be judging other parents, or the interest. My children are only one part of my life.
Detective Sergeant Adrian Quinlan.
In addition to the murder investigation, we expect to be charging multiple parents with assault. We're deeply disappointed and quite shocked to see a group of parents behaving this way.
Chapter 19.
Oh, Madeline, sighed Ed. He parked the car, pulled the keys from the ignition, and turned to look at her.
You can't make Chloe miss her friend's party just because Ziggy isn't invited. That's crazy.
They'd driven straight from the school down to the beach to have a quick coffee at Blue Blues with Jane and her parents. It had been Jane's mother who had suggested it, and it had seemed so important to her that Madeline, who had an overly ambitious list of things to achieve on the kids' first day at school, felt she couldn't say no.
No, it's not, said Madeline, although she was already feeling the first twinges of regret.
When Chloe heard she was missing Amabella's A party, there would be hell to pay. Amabella's last birthday party had been insane. Jumping castle, a magician, and a disco.
I'm in a very bad mood today, she told Ed.
Really, said Ed. I would never have noticed.
I miss the children, said Madeline.
The back seat of the car felt so empty and silent. Her eyes filled with tears.
Ed guffawed. You're kidding, right?
My baby has started school, wept Madeline.
Chloe had marched straight into the classroom, walking right alongside Miss Barnes as if she were a fellow teacher, chatting the whole way, probably making a few suggestions for changes to the curriculum.
Yep, said Ed, and not a moment too soon.
I think those were the words you used yesterday on the phone to your mother.
And I had to stand there in the schoolyard making polite conversation with my ex-bloody husband.